This is Book Public from Texas Public Radio. I'm Yvette Benavides. On this episode, I speak to Jason Diamond about his novel, Kaplan's Plot. I love the title, Kaplan's Plot. Just those two words hold quite a lot about Jason Diamond's novel. I read someplace that the name Kaplan is like the name Smith and that it's very common, and it makes me think that this is a novel about an everyman. I like that idea, that characterization in a novel. And then the word plot is pretty loaded here. It has to do with this element of fiction, of this compelling novel, and also with the cemetery that the character of Elijah becomes obsessed with. His family owns the cemetery. He learns that his great uncle, Solomon Kaplan, is buried there in a plot. He becomes curious about this long gone relative he never knew, and he begins to excavate a story that becomes just as intriguing to the rest of us. Elijah's also trying to figure out the mystery that is his mother, Eve. Their relationship has been fraught for a long time, but now she's dying and he must make the most of their time together. As she starts to share the story of the cemetery and Solomon and other family members, the old resentments fall away and there's a path that they're making to reach each other. His discoveries bring him knowledge of his maternal grandfather, Yitz. Because of his checkered and questionable past as a gangster, Eve has always been ashamed of him and never talked about him to her son. But the secrets are unraveling. This family, across generations, must find a reckoning with what has gone on before and walk together toward acceptance of exactly who they are. I spoke to author Jason Diamond about his novel, Kaplan's Plot. Can you tell us about the novel and just set the table for us for people who haven't yet read it?
You know, I think because I'm a writer, I always kind of try to give an elevator pitch and then I kind of spin myself in circles. But it's also about this. And so the easiest way to set it up is I try to tell people, I'm like, I love gangster movies. I love novels about organized crime. I think The Godfather and The Godfather 2 specifically are like some of the greatest works of art in American history. And I think in some ways the novel is sort of my take on The Godfather 2, except Jewish and set in Chicago. And it's not about like, the heavy hitters in the organized crime world. And it's not about the son taking over the family, but it's about, we see two timelines. One is Yitzhak and his brother Solomon coming over from Odessa in the early 20th century to escape pogroms, and what we watch them grow up, and Yitzhak, I think it's always easy to say turns to a life of crime, but crime was really the only option that was presented to him. So we watch him become a criminal throughout his life. And on the other side of it, juxtaposed with the story of his daughter who was dying of cancer and her son Elijah, who didn't know anything about his grandparents. And so they're learning the story kind of together and also, I think, growing together at the same time. So it's, I think the best, like, gangster stories are bigger than just, like, guys in nice suits brandishing Tommy guns. You know, like, The Sopranos is about so many, like, changing norms and values in immigrant American communities and the changing face of masculinity. And The Godfather is about family. And this is, to an extent, about family, but it's also about generational trauma. And I think the things we're born with that we don't even really know about, the things we inherit from the generations.
Tell us a little bit about Elijah and also about Eve.
Eve is the one I really connected with, weirdly enough, because I think I went back and in the edits, that was the only thing I really worked on, is Eve, the mother. He's a failed tech guy, which I kind of, you know, I find that kind of amusing, because we're so obsessed with tech people now and startup people and the Elon Musks and Mark Zuckerbergs. And, you know, there's always like the lower level guys, the guys who are just everyday millionaires, I guess, who, you know, think they're reinventing the wheel and have all this fancy jargon for it. But it just, you know, turns out they're doing some new take on the grocery store that you just use an app for or something. But he's come back to Chicago sort of with his head hung low because everything is, his whole life has just kind of failed before he's even in his middle age. And his mother, Eve, is a poet and professor, and she, you know, she's dying and kind of coming to that. She's coming to grips. I think she's come to grips with it, but this has been kind of mentioned, but she turns to medical marijuana a lot for it. So she's high throughout it. And, you know, I think I wanted to sort of it, I didn't want to like portray like some like silly, goofy stoner thing. I used it more to sort of loosen her up. And we kind of see their relationship evolve over the course of the book. And, you know, it's a short time period that they're looking at, but in that time period, you know, she's closing in on the end of her life, and they've never been very close. And you know, we get to kind of see that bond kind of grow, and it's something that I was I found it actually very moving to do. You know, like I was like, this is kind of a these are fictional people, but I'm feeling like very good about doing this for them, which is a weird feeling.
Oh my gosh, I love this idea because I was thinking about how your previous book was a work of nonfiction. And I, you know, this idea of fiction, I think it really pushes you into reality and the truest truths. And even though your characters are fictional, I mean, I feel like, yeah, I can see how you would have felt that way. Yeah, so I want to ask you a little bit about Elijah because he just, you know, he's in a bad way, I think. And he's not having an easy time of things. And he wants so desperately to get to know Eve. And he sort of becomes immersed in this new space about the family and Solomon Kaplan and all of this. And I feel like that is such an interesting seedbed to kind of play with as a writer, I think, and also to have it be in Chicago. So so a lot of questions, a lot to unpack there. I don't even know what the question is, but Chicago, a novel set in Chicago, and that's a very particular kind of novel, as you know. Let's go there. What does Chicago mean to you as both a setting or even a kind of a character for sort of Elijah then to be in again?
Well, you know, I was born here, and I was born in Chicago. I'm actually sitting in Chicago right now as we speak. I live in Brooklyn, but I try to tell people this with like, I try not to even smile because I don't want them to think I'm deadly. I just want them to know I'm deadly serious. I'm like, this is the great American city for all the, for all its greatness. It has all of its flaws. For all of its flaws, it has 10 times more greatness. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just think it's everything Chicago can tell you about everything about America. And, you know, as somebody who's I've lived in New York longer, I try to explain to people, I'm like, you if you don't like New York, I absolutely understand that. You either like it or you don't. It is not an easy city. I love it with all my heart, but when people are like, yeah, it's not really for me, I'm like, that's totally understandable. But to me, Chicago is a place that you know, it has its reputation, which I, you know, Chicagoans don't really care what anybody thinks about it, which is a very Midwestern thing. But it is a tough city, and it's a working city, and it's a place that just everybody has come through here at one, you know, you have to come through Chicago at some point, whether you're a sports team or a touring band or you know, your family had to go across country at some point in their journey. They probably came through Chicago. And for me, you know, there was just absolutely no way I was going to do it anywhere else because a lot of this novel is based on my own family experiences. And I use the novel as an excuse to just be able to stretch things a little bit more. And so, you know, knowing what I know about my family, who I also have never had a very close relationship with, and I had to like do all the digging to kind of understand, you know, certain things that I always kind of assumed or things I picked up on, I just sort of understood that obviously, like organized crime or these kinds of things can be anywhere, but Chicago has always had a very particular flavor because everybody knows Al Capone. That's just like they still have tours of like Al Capone's favorite everything in Chicago. And, but like the thing about Chicago that I grew up understanding very in my own living room was There are different levels of this stuff. It's not all like mobsters and mafia and made men and all of these tropes that we've been. There are guys who have normal jobs and they're just connected in certain ways. And I always just found those guys really interesting. And Chicago is filled with them. I mean, it is filled with crooked politicians, crooked cops, crooked everything. And they just do it in such an interesting manner here that it's, yeah, I don't know. Having a front row seat to it my whole life, I just kind of wanted to unpack it a little bit.
And it's here, but what about like the Chicago of like the 1920s? Like, how did you do that particular research? Because the details, as you said, there's like this, there are these two sort of timelines that we're following. How did you do the research for the earlier era of Chicago?
Honestly, I stripped away a lot of what I knew because, like, I remember watching, I think they showed me this is like a very, to me, this is like, I know a lot of kids who had this experience, but like they showed us the Untouchables in like eighth grade. It was like a, okay, we're gonna watch a movie about Chicago history, and it was the Untouchables.
My gosh.
And it's a great film. I love it, but
Yeah.
it's that to me is sort of like how Chicago is always looking on film or on TV. And so, I used sort of the things I'd seen and then stripped away the fact that I'm like, okay, this is not a movie set. This is where I'm taking people there. So I have to really do as much reading as possible. And so I read everything from newspapers to, I mean, I went and reread The Jungle by Upton Sinclair. I there's there are literally there are books that were like commissioned studies by, I believe, the University of Chicago on like the gangs of Chicago, like not like a fictional like the Gangs of New York book, but like literally like how what sections had like the Polish gangs and the and like the Swedish part and the Irish part and the Jewish part, and like how those places looked. And I just kind of played around with that. And then a lot of the action takes place in and around the specific street in Chicago called Maxwell Street, which, today it's like they've raised most of it, and they like turned it into like college dorms, and it's pretty sad. I mean, there's like statues and plaques dedicated to it, but Maxwell Street in the early 20th century, up until like the 30s or 40s, was it was the, they called it the Jewish ghetto, and it was the kind of like the Lower East Side in Chicago, except smaller and I think dirtier, and from what I've understood, a lot more dangerous. I got to see the last kind of days of that Maxwell Street, growing up. I was born in 1980, so I got to see, by then it had changed over. It had become the Maxwell Street that you get to see in the Blues Brothers, which was, the Jewish population gave way to the black population that had largely come up from the South during the Great Migration. And so you have the Eastern European Jewish population kind of starting their American journey, and then you have this whole other group of people, and they also reshape America because that's where the blues comes from, the electric blues like Muddy Waters and Chess Records stuff. So
Yeah.
I just read as much as I could, and I knew enough, so I just had to sort of like paint it all in my head.
Oh my gosh, it's great. And I was going to ask you this idea that Elijah discovers that his family owns the Jewish cemetery. I mean, I love this play on words with your title.
Thank you. Yeah.
And discovers, things about this great uncle and his grandfather, the gangster. And I started to think about what you said about generational trauma. It's such a real thing. And I had occasion to interview an author named Sacha Bonet a couple of weeks ago about a work of nonfiction she wrote called The Water Bearers. And she brings in like this really fascinating idea about generational trauma, about how women carry everything. We carry everything that our mothers and our grandmothers have ever had to carry, the good and the bad. And I was thinking about this when I was reading your book, and these insights that pop up for me about generational trauma. We are, as you say, damaged differently. And the facts of Yitz's history as a gangster have a lingering effect on Elijah, like it or not. So I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that.
I've written a memoir, so I don't ever worry about too much information. But I've dealt with depression. I've had ADHD my entire life. I'm literally, I like to joke that I had it before there was even an H. They just called it ADD when I was a kid. I was like, they were like, "Oh, you're born that way," and I was like, "Huh, it's weird. You're born that way. You're born with these things." That's what people would tell me, or doctors, or my parents, or, and you know, I started realizing as I got older that everybody in my family has some sort of damage, like that they, didn't either treat, because I love getting treatment for my, various mental problem issues. I like to try to keep things under control as best as possible. But I kind of got to observe a lot of different people with a lot of different issues, and I don't like to like play Dr. Freud, but I would, the more I'd think about like why certain people in my family are the way they are or were, I'm like, I feel like these are things that we were born with. Like, it just so happens that my wife and I share a very similar experience, where both of our fathers are children of Holocaust survivors, and both of our mothers come from Eastern European Jewish families who escaped in the early 20th century before, but they still had to deal with worrying that Russian troops were going to come and kill them or whatever, these terrible things they had to deal with. And the more I thought about like how that affected us, I was like, wait, how did that affect our fathers? And I'd look at our fathers, I'm like, they're so similar in a lot of ways. And then I'd look at like our grandparents and how they did, and it just kind of became this ripple effect where I just started kind of going, huh. And their parents and their parents, because with the Jewish story, there's a lot of violence in the history of literally thousands of years of this. But it made me think a lot about, because to me, it's not a Jewish book, it's a book about immigrants. But to me, when I started really thinking about that, it also made me think about like, oh, if you're Irish and your family may have come over during the famine, or you talk about Chinese immigrants who have been here for 2 centuries almost, and the things they dealt with when they were trying to like come up in America, and what they had maybe escaped. And you just think about all these different people and how America is just filled with people from all over the world, and the reason they come to America is because they want a better life. And I have to imagine that almost all of us in our DNA somewhere have that little germ of I don't know, I guess trauma maybe, but like, it's I think we all have it somewhere deep inside of us, like we're born with it no matter who we are. And that's made me really appreciate other people a lot more and try to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, that's so profound. And I hear you. I really agree with you on this point. Can we talk about secrets? So
Sure.
you have written a memoir. It's all out there. But within the novel, I feel like this idea of family secrets and damage and the kinds of things that we try to hide from each other, even within our families, or the types of things that are unknowable, really, with any amount of certainty, because we suppress things or we keep them quiet. Or, somebody said to me once that all families have secrets. And if you don't think that's true, the secret is about you, So,
Wow.
this idea of secrets and families, what does the process of uncovering these secrets, even, sort of by way of Elijah's experience, how it reveals so much about the nature of a family, about identity, or about the things that we, again, that we inherit in our families. I think there's something, again, so deep in this novel about that. But to be sort of unafraid, because I think your characters also bear out this point. This is something I love about literature, is our characters remain mysteries, because in real life, we do remain mysteries to each other to a certain extent,
Oh yeah, of course.
and enigmatic. And there are questions that your novel asks that I don't want to know the answer to. I don't think we'll ever know the answer to, but I love the questions that it presents. Does that make sense? So.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, for me, it's the thing is, it's like when we say the word secret, you know, it's like, is it always a secret? Like, is it there that people don't want you to know about? Or is it just something that they don't want to talk about? It's like there's different degrees of it. And that's something I learned with my own family. Again, like this is all a lot of stuff I've internalized for so long. And, you know, not to get too dark, but coming from, you know, being the first one born in America after the Holocaust on my dad's side, you know, they didn't talk about anything. Like, and we would like, there would always be like a suitcase hidden in my grandfather's closet. And my stepmother explained, oh yeah, he was always worried he would have to run. When I was a kid, he used to hide guns around the house. And it wasn't that he was secretly hiding guns. It's just, he hid guns in case, and we weren't supposed to find them, you know, but it was a secret to me. It wasn't a secret to him. It was just his way of coping. And then my mother's family, you know, I've always wondered, I still do, I guess, in some ways, because it's funny to me, because the people I was around on their side of the family were all like very like, you know, now I look at it, it was almost caricatures of like these kind of flashy, I want to say like guys who acted like big shots in a very Chicago, you know, like, hey, how you doing? What's up, guy? Have you know, I like guys just peeling, like, you know, they'd come to family functions, they'd pull out a baseball size wad of cash and it'd have $100 bill and then like a hundred one and they'd just be doling it out to all the kids, and like they all had great jewelry, and it was really crazy. And I'm like, I know, I mean, I've looked up the record, the police, you know, the court records and police records. And I'm like, some of those guys literally went to prison. Oh, and nobody talked about it. And I don't know why. I don't know, again, if it was a secret or if it was just something we were ashamed of. Or, you know, there's that thing that happens when a family becomes more American and the traces of the old country, whatever country they came from, be it the language, be it the food, the dress, or, you know, I think the striving that I think a lot of immigrants do naturally, I think my family became, like my immediate family, I think became embarrassed by that.
Well, I'm thinking about this idea of Jewishness and Jewish identity. I mean, certainly within the context of Chicago, I suppose, and with this, in your case, with this personal backstory that you have, but Elijah's story too. Did you find yourself exploring your Jewishness or somehow through Elijah in terms of the experiences of the grandfather or even the experiences of the mother? Because I just find that part of the story so interesting for all the reasons that you've intimated, all the reasons that you've touched on so far about the generational trauma, the story of immigration, the story of contributions to this country, or the story of the things that people had to do just to survive, or the funny, quirky things within the family, right?
Yeah.
I feel like it's all of a piece, you know, and I feel like you wrote a very Chicago novel. You know, the Chicago novel is a very particular thing, I think, for me as a reader. And I feel like your contribution to that is tremendous. Also, though, the kind of the Jewish story that I fall into here. But I wonder if you can talk about that just in terms of how did you go into that part of it yourself, maybe via Elijah? And what did you discover or what did you end up thinking in 2025, I have to say, that you could convey about the Jewish American story?
My upbringing was strange because I was born in right outside of, it's literally like, I think right over the border, or it's called Skokie, Illinois. And when I was born, it was like a year after or 2 years after the Illinois Nazi Party had tried to march through Skokie and was famously lampooned in the movie, in the Blues Brothers, which seems to be the only movie I ever reference anymore for some reason, besides The Godfather. I mentioned it twice, I think now, but, and, you know, I think at the time when I was born, it had, I believe, one of the largest, behind New York and maybe Miami, largest population of Holocaust survivors. in America. And, so I grew up very aware of what I was. My mom wasn't religious, but she always talked about, like, you come from a very people that have, gone through so much but contributed so much, and you should be proud of that. And we weren't religious. We had little, like, some of the bits of tradition here and there. And, I also grew up with, like, the New York side of my family, where my dad, when they came to America, they're New Yorkers when they moved here, and they consider themselves New Yorkers over anything else, I think. And so I was very aware of, like, the New York East Coast Jewish thing, and I like it. I love all that. I love Seinfeld. I love Mel Brooks. I love the whole, I eat bagels too much. I love all of that stuff. But Chicago, it has a different, first of all, I mean, the Jewish population mostly is up on the north side now at this point. But it's not like New York, where it's, like, just so in the culture. In New York, you can talk to a Puerto Rican guy at a Dominican bodega and they'll speak some Yiddish. It's like a weird, you get, in Chicago, it's a little bit different. You don't really have that. And when I was a kid, I was at least around other Jewish people and around a lot of immigrants, be it Soviet Jews, but also Korean kids, Mexican kids, Chinese kids, a lot of different, just kids from all over. But when I was a little older, we moved north, and I suddenly found myself, the only Jewish kid. Like, literally, I think I was, like, one of two Jewish kids in the school at some point. And kids are cruel, and so I had to deal with a lot of stuff growing up. And I think that made me more proud of being Jewish. And so I just dug into it and started, kind of learned about it on my own and learned about things. I tried. I was religious for a little while. I tried to be religious, but I'm like, I'm not a religious guy, I don't think. But and then, most importantly, I think I ended up marrying a Jewish person, which, I just married the person I'm in love with. But I do think there is there's a lot of emphasis placed on marrying within the faith and all that. I just happened to meet, my soulmate, and, Jewish. But while I was writing this, I was really conscious about the fact that, like, I'm my own person, and I don't want to adhere to any tropes or any ideas or any preconceived ideas of what a Jewish person is, because I think a lot of them have been sort of, like, written down and set in stone for way too long. And frankly, I think some of them are they border on parody at this point. The sort of, like, shticky, Borscht Belty kind of, hey, like the Jackie Mason sounding, or the nebbish, or the overbearing mother. I just didn't want to, yeah, I just didn't want to, like, or the best, I mean, I come from, like, a pretty, like, blue collar family. Like, I mean, Elijah's family has some money, but it's because his grandfather was a mobster. That kind of, like, helped his mother. But I really wanted to make sure that, like, I didn't fall into any sort of, like, parody or tropes or anything like that.
I'm glad you shared that.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, it's been an interesting, I always say, whenever I preface anything with, it's been an interesting time in America. It's kind of funny to say that at this point. But, the last, like, 15 or so years, because I write a lot about various strains of culture as a nonfiction writer, and I get a lot of food writing gigs. I just think it's because I like to eat, but so, like, I guess that's, I shouldn't complain about it. But there's been a real, like, something I've loved seeing over the last, like, 15 or so years is you have all of these restaurants and chefs who are like, I'm revisiting, this, my culture from this part of Mexico, or my family's from this part of India, and I want to change the way people look at Indian food, or I want to take this part of Chinese cuisine, and I've loved seeing that. And I've loved seeing people in America be like, I want to get in touch with what my grandparents, great grandparents, what they did. And I think there's something really beautiful about that. At the same time, and as somebody who's done that, I think myself, I've tried to get in touch with things as best I could that I think maybe lined up with what my family may have eaten or things they listened to. I wanted to like read things they'd read. I was curious, but I think for me, ultimately, I came to a point where I'm like, well, this is who I am. I am a first generation American. I am very proud of that because, what I was going back to what I was saying earlier about how we all sort of come from something, probably something terrible in our family's past. I think the likelihood of me being born, given my family's circumstances, was pretty slim. So I'm kind of like walking around being like, oh man, I'm very grateful to be able to have this life I have and blah, blah, blah. And so I don't try to take for granted when I was born, where I was born, anything like that. But I think everything that I've learned about my heritage and, however people classify being Jewish as so many different things now, like whether it's religion or whether it's culture, I'm just like the things I've learned about about Judaism or Jewishness, whatever. I just try to take the things that I think help me be a better person and contribute to the world in a positive way. And it's when I say something like that, I kind of feel like I sound like a self-help guru or something, but it's true. It's like there's a lot of beautiful things within, the history and the culture and the religion, but not all of it is for me, or not all of it, makes sense to me. And I don't want to ever blindly, whether it's politics or whether it's philosophy, I don't ever 100% buy into anything. All I know is I'm American and I'm Jewish.
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad you said that. And there's this idea that you were talking about how your mom would say, we come from people who have been through a lot. There's this idea that I see in your novel, too, that there's a darkness, there's people grappling just to stay alive, people grappling just to find their way. Elijah looking at the past as his sort of family history of people just scratching and clawing and trying to survive by any means. But there's a lot in this book that is about love. Like, I really want to underscore that to the lightness in this novel. It's not just dark and this terribleness, or that these characters are steeped in this generational trauma and this damage and this difficulty and this terribleness. There's a lot about love here too. And the other thing I wanted to say is, because you're a writer of nonfiction and you've unpacked a lot about yourself in your writing before, and here you are immersed in this fictional world that you've created, was there something about yourself that you stumbled upon in this process about yourself that you hadn't discovered from unpacking your true story as a nonfiction writer? What did you find in this fictional world about yourself?
Well, one thing, and then that's a really beautiful question. One thing, I don't believe in happy endings. I would love happy endings. But I do believe in redemption. And if it's in this world or the next or whatever, I'm a big believer in that. And, to me, at the end of the, I could say there's a million things about this novel that it's about, but at the end of it, to me, it's about redemption. And being able to sort of clearly, or I say clearly, but it's a novel, so there's nothing clear about it. I guess being able to tell a story and not rely on cynicism or not fall back on, like letting myself sort of be like, there's hope, letting myself figure out a way to write hope into this thing that's so important to me. At a time when I don't think people, I think people feel pretty down these days, and that's easy to understand. But I think finding the way to sort of end in a place where it's like, hey, the openness that I didn't leave it like open. It's not like I don't think I leave too many questions, but I do think I leave it on a hopeful enough note. And I think I was surprised I could do that. I just didn't know I had it in me. And then the other thing, and this was kind of, not to get too into the weeds or the show how the sausage is made, but my editor was very kind with the edits. It wasn't like a huge lift when he gave me the book back, but I got the edits back about, or I got the book back a few months after my daughter was born, my first child. And it was very interesting to have written, a mother-son relationship, a parent-child relationship, not being a parent, and then going back and editing it as a parent. Granted, a parent of only like a few months, but I still was like, I was thinking about everything in a totally different way. That was just the most incredible. I'll never replicate that experience. I don't know if I'd want to either, but just being able to sort of have that sort of like literal before and after, like very clearly in my head, like what I was thinking before and how I had changed when I was reworking certain things. I'm like, I have dressed, I had like, you want to talk about change? Like I was a totally changed person. And I think I've always been a very empathetic person, but the way I was feeling things and the way I was genuinely letting myself feel for these fictional characters and get in their heads and feel what they were feeling and try to see the world through their eyes and stand in their shoes, that was, I've talked to my shrink a lot about it. I would be done writing at the day sometimes. I'd be like, oh my God, I can't get out of Yitzhak Kaplan's head. So, it was a lot of things, and it's just, I just found it to be a very wondrous experience, which it's funny saying that about a book that focuses on like gangsters and has violence that it has, but it is true. It was a wondrous experience, and I'm forever changed from it.
And it really comes through for us. Yes, there is the darkness and the violence and the criminal aspect. But there's so much more for the rest of us, and we need it right now. Jason Diamond, thank you so much for talking to me about Kaplan's Plot. What a thrill to get to talk to you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for the wonderful questions. It's so lovely to get to talk to people about this like this. So thank you so much.
Jason Diamond is the author of Kaplan's Plot. This has been Book Public from Texas Public Radio. Jacob Rosati composed our theme music. Dan Katz is Texas Public Radio's news director. I'm Yvette Benavides.